Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz today.
So the Biden administration once again is in favor of going after Second Amendment rights. And they do it in ways that they believe will give them success, regardless of how duplicitous those ways are. Tony Katz. Tony Katz today. What is happening, everybody? 833-468-8669. 833-GOT-TONY. That's the number. That's how you get to be a part of the show. Find everything at TonyKatz.com. In this case, because you've heard people discuss, well, we should tax ammunition. And then you've heard people say, well, we should have waiting periods. Then we should engage more red flag laws, which would provide law enforcement more opportunities to take away people's Second Amendment rights without proper adjudication. Then there's the gun show. The ever infamous, super scary, oogie boogie gun show loophole. And the Biden administration is once again moving plans that would expand requirements to perform background checks for those who buy firearms at gun shows or online. That's the reporting from the people over there at CBS. Over there at BearingArms.com, they engage the conversation of what the Biden administration is trying to do and the issues with it. Cam Edwards joins me right now. He is the editor at BearingArms.com. He is also the host of Cam and Company. He was there in the days of NRA TV. He is there at BearingArms.com. He is the Second Amendment expert as he follows these things happening all across the country on the state level and on the federal level. He serves on the board of directors for the Citizens Committee for the Right to Keep and Bear Arms, and he has filled in on this very show. Let's start with the basics, make sure we're all on the same page. What actually is the quote-unquote gun show loophole?
Well, it doesn't exist. I mean, frankly, it doesn't exist. And Merrick Garland, the attorney general, has blatantly misrepresented what this rule does. In his press statement, he said, under this regulation, it will not matter if guns are sold on the internet, at a gun show, or at a brick-and-mortar store. If you sell guns predominantly to earn a profit, you must be licensed and you must conduct background checks. Well, Tony, that's basically the rule right now. It doesn't matter if you have a gun shop, if you sell at a gun store, if you have a business at your home. If you are engaged in the business of selling firearms, then you need a federal firearms license. So it doesn't matter, right? There is no gun show loophole. The same rules apply at a gun show that apply everywhere else. What this rule does is expand the definition of who is engaged in the business of selling a firearm. So broadly, in fact, that the ATF's new rule doesn't require you to actually sell a firearm in order to be engaged in the business. Simply offering a firearm for sale could be evidence that the ATF could use to say, well, you should have a federal firearms license. Since you offered a gun for sale and you don't have one, we're going to try to put you in prison for 10 years.
Well, wait, I would ask this. How can you offer a firearm for sale if you don't sell firearms?
Well, if you don't complete the sale, right? Let's say you offer that gun for sale. Hey, you post, to a gunbroker.com. Hey, I've got this, a Glock 19. Let's say nobody buys it. It doesn't matter to the ATF, right? As long as you've offered that single firearm for sale, if you are trying to derive perhaps as little as a penny of profit, right? That is enough to suffice under this new rule. Because what the Biden administration is trying to do is move us as close to universal background checks as possible. And this is the way that they think that they can do that without actually involving Congress.
Talking to Cam Edwards of BearingArms.com. So you're talking about the individual. The individual selling their firearm could be treated like somebody who's in the business of selling firearms, and you don't have the proper licensing, so you're now in trouble. This gun show loophole was always the idea that I could have a private sale to you. I could sell a firearm to Cam Edwards, and I don't have to provide, I don't have to do a background check. I just have to be able to state clearly that I don't know, I have no reason to believe that Cam Edwards is a felon, right? Like, that's the rule on a private, this is about private transactions.
That's exactly what this is about. And I'm going to quote from the rule here, Tony. There is no minimum threshold number of firearms purchased or sold that triggers the licensing requirement. Similarly, there is no minimum number of transactions that determines whether a person is engaged in the business of dealing in firearms. For example, even a single firearm transaction or offer to engage in a transaction, when combined with other evidence, e.g. where a person represents to others a willingness to acquire more firearms for resale or offers more firearms for sale, may require a license. And I want to highlight that word may, because this is one of the problems with the rule. It is not a bright, clear line that allows a gun owner to easily determine whether or not they are engaged in the business. There is no real line at all. There is a vague and fuzzy definition of who is engaged in the business of selling a firearm. And if you think that you might fall on the other side of that fuzzy line, the ATF either wants you to get a federal firearms license, which will cost you several hundred dollars. It's not particularly easy to get because it's not designed for the average gun owner, right? It's designed for firearm retailers. Or, and I think this is the real goal, they want you to go to a gun store. They want you to put that buyer through a background check. And that way, you know, maybe you've indemnified yourself. That's really what this is about. But
talk to me about
the problem.
I don't mean to interrupt, but go ahead. You finish up and then I'll get to my question.
Well, I was just going to say one of the problems is, like many of the ATF rules, including the pistol stabilizing brace rule, you don't know whether or not you're violating the law, right? There is no clear standard for you to follow. And I think that is going to make this very problematic from a legal perspective when this rule takes effect.
So I think for a lot of people, they say, now, this is about a private sale. If we do background checks on sales of guns, why shouldn't we do a background check on all sales of all guns? As a matter of first reading, that seems like a pretty reasonable standard, no?
Well, one of the problems that a lot of gun owners have is that, you know, this is a really good way to establish a backdoor gun registry, right? If you have this collection of all of these firearms transactions, then the government better means what? And the government is not allowed to collect or keep that information. So that's one of the reasons why we've always had that exemption for private sales. One of the other reasons that the NICS system, frankly, the National List and Check system, is not really designed or set up to encompass every private sale of a firearm. We already are seeing, you know, delays in states where things like ammunition is subject to a background check. We're seeing a lot of false denials, but we're also seeing a lot of delays of hours, days, or weeks before people can make a purchase because the system is simply flooded. You know, it's interesting. There are folks at a group called Open Source Defense that a few years ago offered up what they thought would maybe be another way to approach this and basically revamp the NICS system so that it's purely anonymized. You would basically call into the NICS system. You would get a code. They would run the check on you right there. You would get a code saying that you're approved. You would take that code to the buyer. They would, you know, enter in that code and make sure that you're good to go. But there'd be no record of the firearm that was transferred. There'd be no record of, you know, who that gun was sold by. And the information, again, could be anonymized so that there'd be no record of who that gun was sold to. The gun control groups don't want that. Right. I mean, they could have a system where you could have at least voluntary universal background checks. It would certainly be easier for private sellers to have access to the NICS system. But that's not their agenda. That's not their goal. Ultimately, their goal, again, is to scrutinize and to keep a record of every firearm transaction and every gun owner in the country.
Talking to Cam Edwards of BearingArms.com. I want to change gears a little bit and get to this story that you wrote the other day about the arming of teachers, which has been a conversation as we have seen these things play out in schools. A disgruntled student, a student with a political agenda, a series of things happening and not that we want them to happen. And this is a societal and cultural issue in many ways. But the story is that the anti-gunners are losing the argument about armed teachers. I have not heard much of this argument recently. What's been happening around the country? You're talking specifically, it seems, about Tennessee as you start this. What is it that you are seeing on this subject?
So we're seeing movement in a couple of states. Tennessee Senate just passed a bill this week that would allow for armed school staff in public schools. I think it's already been an option for private schools in the state. State of Iowa passed a bill this year that would increase training opportunities for armed school staff, as well as actually provide for their firearms to be purchased by the school district, so they wouldn't have to pay for that out of pocket. Utah Governor Spencer Cox signed a bill just a couple weeks ago that would, again, expand the training opportunities for armed school staff. And Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear, a Democrat, allowed a bill to become law without his signature, so we didn't veto it. And this establishes a guardian program in Kentucky schools where it won't be armed school staff, but you'd basically have, you know, retired law enforcement, retired military who could volunteer to serve as sort of that school resource officer-like position, right? This would not be a formal law enforcement position, but they would be an armed presence on campus in case of an attack. And I think it's really interesting that Beshear allowed that bill to become law. Didn't sign it, right, but he didn't veto it. And, you know, he is a Democrat. Granted, Kentucky's a pretty red state, but I think, you know, taken all together, this shows that really we are making really good strides towards adding this additional layer of security for those districts that want it, right? I'm not aware of a single state that requires any teacher to be armed or any school district that requires teachers to be armed. These are all sort of, you know, voluntary steps that educators take because they are willing to serve as that first or last line of defense, as the case may be, in the case of a target attack on a school campus.
When you see this happening in Tennessee, and you see it's happening, as you discussed, in Kentucky, where the governor didn't put up a fight, is that a signal to both red states and blue states that the people have kind of spoken? This is the thing they're interested in. This is a security measure they want to be have available to them as an option.
You know, I don't know if it's, I don't know if we're quite there yet, particularly in these blue states, right? I mean, you look at the Democrats. Democrats, for the most part, don't even want school resource officers. They don't want police officers in school. So they certainly object to the idea of having armed school staff, right? And the argument, you know, the teachers don't want this. They don't want to bear that responsibility. Now, I've spoken with folks out in Colorado, for example. Laura Carno runs the Faster Colorado training program for teachers. She said they've only had one district that wanted to adopt armed school staff where they didn't have enough, you know, employees to make it possible. Normally what happens is actually the opposite. There are too many volunteers for them to get trained all at once. So they've got to sort of pick and choose. All right, well, who's going to be this first wave of armed staffers? I think what we are seeing, though, is that parents across the country are concerned about the safety of their kids in school. They know that a gun-free zone sign doesn't work. They know that there are all kinds of discipline problems. And, you know, again, having that extra layer of protection, particularly in these districts where, you know, first responders might be 20, 30 minutes away, it does give parents, I think, a feeling of security, but I think it also adds a legitimate layer of security to these districts. And so, yeah, I think we're going to see more of this. I think there's going to continue to be resistance on the left, but I think this is going to continue to grow in popularity.
Cam Edwards, you find him over at BearingArms.com. And you're Cam Edwards on X, right? Like, you haven't changed. You haven't changed your name.
I haven't changed. I don't post all that frequently, but it's still Cam Edwards on X.
BearingArms.com, Cam Edwards on the X. Cam Edwards, always a pleasure. More to get to. I'm Tony Katz. I don't know you, Dan O'Donnell, but I'm going to give credit where it's due. He's a radio host out of Wisconsin. Nicely done in the 1-2 punch on X. Oh, this is precious. Tony Katz. Tony Katz today. What is going down? Give credit where it's due, people. It's very, very important. This is a Maxine Waters story, and I know what you're saying. No, Tony. No, Tony. Not a Maxine Waters conversation.
No, God! No, God, please, no! 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 No!
O-M-G. OMG. Are you kidding me right now?
Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son.
I don't know what the third one was for. Honestly, that was not necessary whatsoever. Maxine Waters, the representative from California, was doing a little bit of a TV hit, and she was complaining that somebody came up to her and was unhappy with some of her policies, and it sounded like this.
As a member of Congress with people, you know, who evidently had a racist attitude, and recently one even confronted me in a restaurant, and they don't say racist things, but right. What they say is they don't like something I said. They don't like a position that I took. But you know that, you know, if you were not black, you would not be approached that way.
Right. They probably would not. Right. They would think twice about doing it. They think that they can get away with doing it with you. And
so if I have a complaint about a black member of Congress because of their policy, I don't like the policy of a black member of Congress. If I say something, it's because I'm a racist. That is precious. You want to talk about being fragile. You know, they wrote, Robin DiAngelo wrote that nonsense book, White Fragility. Look who's fragile here. Oh, someone can't come up to you and say, I disagree with you. You're an elected official. I don't think anybody should attack you. I don't think anybody should hurt you. Someone telling you they disagree with something you did, that's standard. You can't handle it. Don't run for office. Not my fault you're weak. Not my fault you are weak. But wait a moment. Did you just say it's wrong for somebody to confront you in a restaurant? That is so weird, because back in 2018, you were all about it.
Let's make sure we show up wherever we have to show up. And if you see anybody from that cabinet in a restaurant, in a department store, at a gasoline station, you get out and you create a crowd. And you push back on them. And you tell them they're not welcome anymore.
When it was Trump and the Trump cabinet, you could say anything, you could push back, you could actually confront them in a restaurant. But you can't be confronted, Maxine Waters? My God, are you weak? I haven't met every black woman, but allow me to say this. The black women that I am friends with, way stronger than you. So this isn't about being a black woman. This is about being a liberal who doesn't think you should be allowed to speak to her. You shouldn't be able to say anything to her, and anything she disagrees with, she should be able to just throw race in your face and just move on like nothing happened. You coward. You want to talk about despicable? You want to talk about unworthy? Unworthy. Listen to what you just said. As Keira Davis, her whole podcast, just listen to yourself. Just listen to what you said. It's okay to confront a Trump cabinet member in a restaurant and push back and tell them they're not welcome. But no one's allowed to say to you in a restaurant, I disagree with this policy. You're a coward. And you want to hide behind race? Oh, it's ugly. It's so incredibly ugly. You want to know why people, you know, we talk about race relations and are they an issue? I sometimes wonder if they're the issue that the left tells us that they are. But it is clear that people like Maxine Waters always want to find a way to make something racial, and usually for her own protection. How dare you speak to her? How dare you think that you can voice an opinion to her? Don't you know that she's important and she's special? Except she's neither one of these things. She's an elected official, and like any elected official, you are allowed to voice your grievances. I think you should be polite. I think you should be respectful, but you can do it. And when someone is as disrespectful as Maxine Waters comes to the scene, well, I think you should still be respectful because you're you. But dear Lord, shame on the people of California who keep voting for this terrible, bigoted person. Good on you, Dan O'Donnell, for getting that 1-2 punch out there to the world. Find everything at TonyKatz.com. This is Tony Katz today. A couple of years ago, my main station, WIBC in Indianapolis, was purchased by a group called Urban One, and people freaked. Tony Katz. Tony Katz today. Find everything I do over at TonyKatz.com, and you get the videos, the YouTube channel, Rumble, and anywhere you put in Tony Katz, just start subscribing right away. As long as it's the right Tony Katz. I think there's an environmental lawyer named Tony Katz. I feel super bad for that dude. Because, he must get a lot of Google alerts with something I'm doing on radio. I feel terrible for him. I'm sure he's a nice guy. I only hope he is. The station got purchased. The whole group in my area of Indianapolis got purchased. And people freaked out because we're this, you know, conservative talk station. The conservative talk station of the state of Indiana. And here we are bought by Urban One, which was founded on the idea of providing a black voice to a black audience. Kathy Hughes founded the company in that way, and her son, Alfred Liggins, is the CEO. And they've grown, and they've built, and they've got radio, and they've got TV. They owned a casino for a while out in Maryland. Big company. They bought the station. People freaked out because it's Urban One, and you're a conservative. It's not going to work. And I said, I have no reason to think it's not going to work. And I said this on air. Would everybody just calm down? We're not going to sit here and question what the future might hold by getting into a panic. We don't know what we don't know. So far, I have no reason to be concerned because they had purchased a different outfit out in Charlotte. And in Charlotte, they bought a station called WBT, which is an excellent excellent talk station, and conservative station, and nothing changed. And I reached out to some of those guys. I was like, anything? And no, everything's good. Well, in the almost 2 years now that station, my main station, has been under this ownership, I can say that everybody's fears were unfounded. Right? Maybe asking the questions, is this going to change things? That's normal. Oh my gosh, they're going to fire you, Tony. They're not going to let you do this. They're not going to let you do that. None of that has happened. None of that has happened. As a matter of fact, I've got some announcements coming in a couple of weeks that will further prove that their business model is what is good content and how can we make money on it? Which we can all agree, that's a pretty good business model. We can live with that business model. Now, maybe they'll put content out there that you may not necessarily agree with or like, but that's the whole point. They're not excluding. I don't have that issue, and I have not come across that issue. This conversation came up again, not in relationship to the ownership in Indianapolis from a group called Urban One, but rather about George Soros. Because George Soros, his group, Soros Fund Management, and we should be clear, I am not a fan of George Soros. I think George Soros is terrible. I think it's okay to talk about George Soros as a problem. It doesn't make you an anti-Semite, and anybody who says otherwise is full of crap, and you can tell them that your Jewish friend Tony said so. George Soros is bad for conversations not only of free speech, but bad for the future of America and a free and thriving society. Certainly has worked in a way that is in opposition to liberty. And his group bought a controlling interest in a radio group called Odyssey. Odyssey is a pretty big group, and I don't have a bad thing to say about the group at all. I don't. Like every radio group at some time, financial issues. Radio has not been easy. And if only because, you have advertisers who have now this whole digital footprint that they can play in. And then you have, I guess the term would be the bifurcation. There are so many places to get content now. It makes radio compete with a lot of other players. A tremendous number of other players. The amount of streaming versus the amount of radio listening, that change creates a pressure on the radio world. What makes radio work is two things. A, locality, right? Is it would just be localness or would it be locality? The idea that you can connect locally with a local audience on local issues, that doesn't change. If there's a tornado in town or a storm in town or an issue in town, you turn to local news and you turn to local radio. That part has not changed. The other thing that works in radio is the idea of personality. And specifically, are there people that you go to who you know, like, and trust, or you have built trust with, that you want to hear their analysis of a subject? No one tunes in because they need the news, although sometimes news is breaking and we do break it. Talk radio is about getting an understanding and an analysis of the news, and certainly about entertainment as well. It's those things, and there radio still does very, very well, and then it's available in all these other forms. Odyssey, as a radio group, and I'm talking about from the trades, I'm not speaking out of school at all, no issue, they've got fine stations and all that jazz, seriously. Good people working over there. They have had this issue, including a I think it's a Chapter 11 bankruptcy, and Soros Fund Management, which is controlled by the Open Society Foundations, has put money in and acquired a controlling interest in Odyssey. And that has people saying, oh, really? Really, really, really? Well, what does this mean for radio? Newsmax has a story that they are actually looking at acquiring other radio companies, like, for example, Cumulus. This was a report from a group called Semaphore. If you haven't seen Semaphore, S-E-M-A-F-O-R, there's some good writing over there. There are at least some good stories over there. I'll let other people debate the writing. Cumulus is a major company. They're connected with the syndicator Westwood One, and a lot of products get syndicated in that way. Is this a problem for radio? And the answer is maybe. Maybe, maybe, maybe. I don't have an answer yet. What I will tell you is, while I had zero concerns regarding, for example, Urban One, this is a company buying another company. I had no reason to think anything was going to go wrong or anything was going to be problematic. I would simply apply a wait and see, as you would with any new ownership. Things are different. This is not that. Soros getting into the game is something worthy of paying attention to. I said when Biden got elected, and let me tell you, it hasn't happened, and I am only amazed that it hasn't happened. I am amazed that no one has talked about bringing back the Fairness Doctrine. So the Fairness Doctrine is, here I am talking about the political left, so clearly someone's got to be on the air talking about the political right. Somehow you got to have this, almost a quid pro quo, or this for that, on the conversations. As opposed to, I am allowed to engage and share thoughts and ideas as I see fit. This station, who works via an FCC license, has the ability to put on the programming that they choose. I could get my own station if I wanted to and put on the programming I choose, and so could you. So therefore, why in the world would you have to do a bit of a this for that? So I have been amazed that the Fairness Doctrine didn't come forward as a way to try and silence people like myself or other people that you might listen to. Will there be moves to tell Soros, okay, that's enough? Now, there could be, for example, from the Federal Communications Commission, conversation about, hey, there's only so many stations you can own, right? There are restrictions on radio stations that an entity can have control of. But there's also there's restrictions in toto, right? The total marketplace, meaning sea to shining sea. And then there are restrictions within specific cities about what you can own. And we should be clear that we're not just talking about talk stations. Music stations have probably taken the bigger hit in terms of overall listenership than talk stations, because talk stations still have the personalities and immediacy of a news cycle, etc. Music you can get anywhere. Oh, dear Lord, just look at your phone. Your phone is your music. By the way, your phone now is everything except your phone, because no one talks to anybody anymore. Your phone, this brick that you carry around with you in your pocket or your purse, it has access to all the music and all the things that you need. It makes it very hard. Music radio certainly having a hard time with it. But music radio could also move a message in terms of, let's say, ads that get played or ads that don't get played or public service announcements that get played. A whole series of things. Congressman Nick Langworthy is asking the FCC chair to investigate, saying, quote, "I believe this sale is the latest in a series of moves by a partisan progressive billionaire to consolidate control over the media and flood hundreds of radio stations with far-left ideology and propaganda. Furthermore, I believe that what we could lose in the process is the unique lifeline that local radio brings through both local connection and diversity of thought that have been so important to Americans, particularly in recent years." There is a reason, I think a legitimate reason, to be concerned with what Soros is doing. And I do think that it requires our attention. Now, I may have my weekend show or Eat, Drink, Smoke, the Cigar and Bourbon show on some Odyssey stations. And certainly if I had a chance, as I'm growing out things that I do, to be on Odyssey stations, I would relish that opportunity. They've got some fantastic markets that I'd be over, Midwest markets especially, I'd be overjoyed to be a part of. But now, you know, anybody who is there would ask themselves, well, am I getting anything? Am I being told anything? Is anything being pushed my way? I would look for that. I'd be aware of that. We all should. Now, what would one do if, let's say, I have the show? I mean, I'm giving you it's not even a peek behind the curtain. It's the way I'm thinking about it as I'm trying to grow my own show here. Right? You want to be able to impact an audience. You certainly want to be able to have more people engaged with you. Of course. I mean, there's a moment I think of you know, you don't have to be everywhere to everyone. As I've often said, if I can just be a Midwest guy, I'm super happy. I'm good. I can leave the coast to other people. I don't need that nonsense. I'm fine. If I'm not heard in New Jersey, my hometown is not going to miss me. We're going to be all right. But what if, for example, I'm doing my show and no one gives me some note about, hey, you can't say that about Biden. Ooh, you shouldn't say that about Obama. Oh, you can't say that about progressive things. No one gives me a note. Let's say no one gives me a note. But what if the ad structure is only about those other things? Would that be something that I have to say I can't be here? Or is that something you keep going on because your job is to try and engage with people and share with people and push a unique idea, and you can overcome maybe what would be considered by some to be a counter programming? And what if that counter programming doesn't come? I cannot tell you exactly what this will mean. I can tell you that I am absolutely aware of it. And I am a believer that we all should be. This is something we should be paying attention to, because we have seen, right, in this we have a real background, real history of things Soros has done or attempted to do. Do I think that it's the end of the radio world? No. do I have a guarantee that he's going to screw with these companies he's now purchasing or looking to purchase? I don't know, but the history would say yes. What does one do in that situation? First, I say you don't overreact. And second, you don't panic. You just don't do it. It not at all. But do we pay attention? Oh, hell yeah, we pay attention. Keep an eye on that story, and I will update you as I know things. That much is true. This is Tony Katz Today. And the big story, the big reporting today, O.J. Simpson, Orenthal James Simpson, dead at the age of 76, his family putting out on the socials on April 10th. Our father, Orenthal James Simpson, succumbed to his battle with cancer. He was surrounded by his children and grandchildren during this time of transition. His family asks that you please respect their wishes for privacy and grace. Of course, O.J. and the killing of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman, and then going to jail for stealing. And I think this was a guy who knew he did it and was always looking to be punished for it because he didn't get punished the first time around. There is none that I can think of a crazier story in America than the fall of O.J. Simpson. The man was loved by everyone. My father used to say that O.J. Simpson was the kind of guy that could be golfing with the President of the United States, and the President couldn't believe he was golfing with O.J. Simpson. That, I mean, the star college player, the star pro player, the records, then the film career, of course, the Naked Gun stuff. No, and the Hertz commercials, and he's leaping over it. There's no question. A part of Americana. And if you ask me, he did it. What? I can't say it? I can. I did. I'll do it again. If you ask me, he did it. And that fall? I mean, well, you murder your wife, you're going to fall. O.J. Simpson, dead at the age of 76. And that's all I have to say about that. Find everything at TonyKatz.com. Tomorrow, everyone, take care.